My name is Daniel Shoptaw, an Arkansas accountant with a love for the Cardinals. I spent a lot of years watching the game before deciding to write about it. Now I express my thoughts and opinions at C70 at the Bat, part of the Cardinal Conclave. His name is Dan Buffa, a former Busch Stadium scoreboard operator with a passion for the game. His writing talents can be found throughout the internet on a variety of topics, including movies and anything St. Louis. You'll find him often bleeding out words at stlouissportsminute.com. Every week, we pool our knowledge and our opinions to create this podcast. Together, we are the best Dans in baseball. Welcome in to episode 25 of Best Dans in Baseball. I'm Daniel Shoptaw. That's Dan Buffa. We're trying to continue to figure out exactly how to do this thing. We've been about a month since we've done a show. We'd only done a little bit here and there since during the winter, so we got to kind of get back in the swing of things, just like the guys are down in Jupiter. Everything news and stuff coming out, so hopefully we'll have plenty to talk about. Dan, I don't know exactly where to start, but let's start. I see something today I hadn't seen until just right before I pulled this, we started talking, that Tim Cooney's got a little shoulder soreness, if you can say that five times fast. You know, we knew, I think we knew that somebody was going to be hurt in the spring. And I guess we should be pretty glad that if this is an issue, it's with somebody that's probably going back to the minors and it's not a key component of the team. But it's still always tough to see them already starting to maybe wonder about some arm issues.
Yeah, I mean, Cooney, you know, he's coming off of a season where he missed the last portion due to an appendectomy. So he's still kind of getting back in the swing of things. I think it's hopefully just more like a rust thing where he just needs to take it a little bit slower and get his strength back. But the guy I'm really looking for is going to come to shoulder soreness is Mr. Carlos Martinez. He was going to play catch, then he didn't, and then he threw 25 pitches. So he's the guy that I'm kind of looking for when it comes to shoulder soreness this spring.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like reading the story, it does seem like maybe, hopefully, Tim Cooney's just done a little too much till too soon, and he'll be able to get back over it. Yeah, I mean, Carlos Martinez is the guy that has to be healthy. There is a little bit of the depth still with Cooney, with Lyons, with Marco Gonzalez, but there's question marks about all those guys. If you want a strong rotation, and whatever you may think of this offense, this team's going to win based on pitching. And so they're going to need the best they can get out there. And Carlos Martinez, you know, is possibly the best one out there. I mean, you know, you make the Adam Wainwright's going to be the starting opening day starter. But, you know, by the end of the year, I mean, we could be talking about Carlos Martinez really being the ace of the staff.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to looking ahead, I mean, just to who's going to be the ace of the future. I mean, as even Adam Wainwright admitted, you know, he is getting a little bit older. He can still be counted on to be an ace and put up ace type numbers. But you know, when you're the Cardinals and you're John Mozeliak, you kind of start looking ahead to see who's that next guy. And you know, it was always kind of between, you know, him and Waka about a year ago. But after the year he just had and the stuff he had, the quickness that he learned to become a starting pitcher, not just one that can go five innings and, you know, be a good fifth start, but a guy who had top of the rotation stuff. Yeah, he really took a big step. And so when it comes to him being ready, and also a guy who I really, and several other Cardinal fans point to, is the reason that the Cardinals are a little bit more hapless in the NLDS is because they didn't have Carlos Martinez in that rotation. You know, if you have Carlos Martinez, you know, once again, we've said it so many times because, you know, when you get beat by the Cubs, you just got to rehash it like 75 times. But, you know, when you have Carlos Martinez going game two or game four, you never know. So looking forward 2016, 17, 18, yeah, Carlos Martinez is a guy that you're going to be leaning on and not just be a three or a two, but potentially an ace.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think you're right. I said at the time that was probably the difference in winning or losing the divisional series, because I think he goes in game two, and you don't have the issues that you had with Jaime Garcia. Garcia pitches, you know, in game three and hopefully well because he's healthy. You know, not sick. And you know, that could be the ball. That could have been the series right there. So, you're definitely was a huge factor. So, if they're going to win, they got to have him be healthy. And so we'll keep an eye out again. with spring going, it's not a bad thing. And we talk about this all the time. They talk about it every year, about resting these guys, saving the bullets in the arm, all that kind of stuff that goes along with that. And situations like this help that. I mean, if they don't push them through the hard part of, you know, early part of spring training, hopefully, you know, that helps them, you know, have maybe just a little bit extra when September and October rolls around. And again, it's going to take some more managing than just a week or two here in Jupiter. But if this can be the beginning of something, a beginning of a plan for both Martinez and probably Michael Wacha, as we saw, he seemed to struggle last year also. You know, it can't hurt. I guess right now, there's no worries. Right now, you see the positives of him not being out there every day and letting them take his time. In a couple of weeks, if we're still not seeing much of Carlos Martinez, then maybe we have a different issue.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things where, you know, it's going to be one of the things you watch all camp and you watch all year when it comes to these two guys as they go into their second full year of being a full-time starting pitcher, the thing with Wacha is I just think that he's still going against the expectations that fans put on him after that 2013 postseason. And people think that he's just going to be an absolute, like, he's just going to collapse. And, you know, when I think of Michael Wacha, I think, you know, all you got to do is be a 3 or 4 to me, man. I mean, you don't have to be an ace. I mean, I don't think Wacha has that kind of expectation to be an ace, just the way that he pitched last year and maybe his stuff. I mean, if he is going to be, if he makes that big push, I mean, you know, that's great. But right now, I mean, fans, I think they're like, oh, Wacha's going to collapse. He's going to be nothing, or he's just going to be not, you know, not worth anything. I think he can be a very reliable 3 or 4. I mean, all in all, he had a good season last year. He just kind of broke down towards the end, a lot of innings. And, of course, with Lance Lynn throwing with a broken arm, and you got, you know, not being able to throw any kind of breaking pitch. You didn't have Wainwright. You know, Martinez broke down at the end. I mean, the Cardinals, you know, when you lean on starting pitching as much as they did, you know, arms are going to break down. But I think with Wacha, it's just expectations. People think that he's really going to be like this sensational 2013 hero, and I just think he just needs to be a guy like Lance Lynn, be a guy who can pitch, you know, be third in rotation, be fourth, get some innings, and do your job. And with Martinez, though, it just, when it comes to him, it's just health.
It's difficult to backpedal on Michael Wacha. You know, like you say, after 13 especially. And even, you know, 14 he pitched well, 15 he had a pretty good start to the season as well. There are issues with Wacha, and you wonder if he is ever going to be that, you know, that obvious thing that we saw early on. But yeah, I think, you know, I haven't heard too many people running him down. Maybe I've just missed it, but I still feel like, yeah, he could be a 2. He may not ever be the ace. Now, again, the idea with Wacha when he was drafted was that he had a high floor and maybe not the highest of ceilings. You know, that he's going to get to his level fast. And so he may be about where he's going to be. But that's pretty good, especially when you put it in this system and this thing that we're seeing. Now, one guy that we've been talking about shoulder problems and things of that nature. One guy we're not talking about shoulder problems with is Jaime Garcia. We've got Garcia in camp. We've got Garcia healthy. And I know everybody's going to kind of hold their breath and walk on eggshells around Jaime Garcia. But, you know, he went through last year and the injuries that he had weren't arm related. I don't know that I'm ready to say, hey, you could expect him to pitch all year long. But on the flip side, there's probably more reason than ever before to think that's a good possibility.
Yeah, I mean, with Jaime Garcia, it's just, I mean, really, all things considered, you know, his arm has been okay for just about a year. I mean, after the spring training and the missing the first month and a half, it was a leg injury in midseason. I mean, really, he's been healthy except for you have a little sickness. But Jaime Garcia, I mean, if he can stay healthy, you know, that's a guy who's got the best stuff on the staff. I mean, everybody in the staff will admit that. You know, he's got wicked stuff. It doesn't matter if he pitches at home or away. It doesn't matter what lineup he's facing. It doesn't matter, you know, where he's at. He's a good, effective pitcher. He's got great stuff. But here we are as he's getting ready to near, you know, 30 years old, and he's getting a little bit older, and his contract's going to be up. You know, you have options on him for the next year as well. He's a guy that, you know, I'd love to see him prove me wrong. I mean, I look at him and I just see a guy who's you know, whose arm is one bad pitch away from being missing a session and missing a month. And it's just, you know, it's just, if he wasn't a good pitcher, it'd be easier to write off Jaime Garcia. You know, if he came back last year and he was just okay, you know, if he was just kind of durable, you know, not a lot of innings, not effective, and we wouldn't really let him hurt us so much. But the reason he nags at you is because he comes back and he pitches very, very good. And then, you know, last October, I'm writing that, hey, you know, this is the first time you're going to see Jaime Garcia pitch clean in the postseason, healthy-wise, you know, because 2012 didn't count. This is the first time you're going to see him pitch healthy in 4 years. And what, he pitched sick, and he got beat up. And, you know, that was the turning point of that series because, you know, Cardinals dominated game one. Carpenter hits the home run in game two. We're like, is this going to be this easy to knock off the Cubs? It can't be this easy. And Jaime's like, just wait. It's going to get bad. You know, and all of a sudden it's 5-1 and everything just kind of turns. So, and, you know, and we can always look at, hey, you know, if he had just not pitched that day, you know, hey, you know, we can go back and say, what if Lance Lynn just said, hey, I can't pitch hurt, you know. You know, the whole midseason may have been different. But with Jaime Garcia, it's just staying healthy. And it sounds so, you know, recycled with him. It's like, oh, if he can just stay healthy, he can be a Cy Young caliber kind of pitcher. I mean, look at his numbers last year. Wasn't it like 8 or 9 or 10 consecutive starts where he was just quality start? I know him and Martinez both had a very good streak when it comes to quality starts and just being really filthy last year. So if Jaime can stay healthy, then that just takes pressure off everybody else. It takes pressure off, you know, Mike Leake can just be Mike Leake. Waka doesn't have to be the man. Martinez doesn't have to rush back. If you get those kind of, you know, innings from Jaime and Wainwright back, I mean, the Cardinals' rotation, I think, stacks up as good as anybody in the league outside the Mets.
You know, Jaime, you know, except for he walked 5 batters in his first time out, then he didn't walk a total of 5 until you got into August. I mean, he had some injury.
Wow.
You know, there was a gap because of that second injury, that groin injury in there too. But yeah, I mean, he had a stretch where he pitched, you know, in June, he threw 5 innings, or 5 starts, just went to after more than 6, almost, and threw all but one. Had an ERA of 1.03. You know, he was pretty dominant there. And then even when he came back, I mean, he had a really bad game in Cincinnati in September where he gave up 6 runs. Had a couple of starts around that where he gave up 4, but for the most part, that was it. He was very, very good all year long, and we've seen that. Now, it's going to be kind of interesting. I mean, like you say, he's got an option for 2017. It's in a very reasonable option. It's $13 million, whatever this year's is, plus a little bit more. You know, something that doesn't get you, you know, even in the door of a lot of starting pitchers free agent-wise. So, but, you know, Lance Lynn comes back next year. Where do you go from there? Could Garcia be the guy that they trade at the All-Star break? Even if he's pitching well, you know, do you hope that somebody can take his spot and you can use him as a trade bait? I don't know. That's something we'll have to just see as we go along. I would think that's it's a possibility. We've thought that before too.
Yeah, I mean, I think if Jaime made it out of camp, made it to July 31st, was pitching as, let's just say he pitches like he did last year for that stretch, yeah, I think he has to be trade bait. Because are you going to bet the chips on a guy who may get hurt the next start? He's got a comfortable option that you can attach to that trade for the next year. You're going to have Alex Reyes coming back and probably be ready to, you know, to prove something at that point. If you want to go out and get a bat, and you also have Tim Cooney, you know, Gonzalez is going to be ready to go. So I think if Jaime made it to the break, and let's say Matt Adams, you know, performed well enough, I mean, that's a big trade piece you have there. You have a couple guys who could show some value to a team as far as a package deal, especially if the offense is struggling and you need some. Now, hey, if the offense is doing well and your team doesn't really need a lot, and maybe you hold on to Garcia, but we'll see with him, if you get, you know, 15 to 18 straight starts on Jaime Garcia and you got a chance to make a trade, you might have to pull that trigger finally.
We'll see, yeah. I mean, and again, you have to really be confident with who you've got and who's is coming up behind. You know, it would be a situation where if Alex Reyes wasn't having his suspension, and maybe that you would think maybe by that time he's ready to step in, maybe they'd be more likely to do that, but we'll have to see. Now, before we get too far along, you know, we thought we were going to record last week, and we didn't, but when we put out for questions, somebody asked us to, if you could only pick one for a long-term extension between Michael Wacha and Carlos Martinez, who do you pick? I think we're probably going to wind up with the same answer, but go ahead.
I think Carlos, just because of, you know, this time last year, I may not say that. Even with the way that Wacha was kind of a question mark, you know, you didn't really know what you had. Carlos Martinez this time last year was a guy that most people were saying, hey, leaving the bullpen. Oh, we're not sure if he can even be a fifth starter. Oh, I mean, is he really going to start the rotation? I mean, there were so many people on Twitter that were just like, I wish I could just save all those tweets in like a big package and go, see what everybody said last year about this guy. And then here we are a year later, and he's just a guy who really, you know, meant the most to a team in their playoff loss. I mean, like I said, when you think about what happened, his missing presence was a big factor. And that just goes to show you, after a year, the previous spring, where people are not even sure they want him to start, he was that kind of a big factor. And Wacha didn't have a bad season by any means. I mean, you know, he was a horse. You know, he pitched in his most innings. He won a lot of games. You know, he was there. He was one of the only pitchers to really, you know, be unscathed in that whole season when it comes to just hitting the mound and doing his job. But long term, if you had to ask me which guy, you know, I would take, if you said one or the other, I would take Martinez, because I just think he has more upside. I don't think, even as good as he was last year, I don't think we've seen the best of this guy yet. I don't think we're going to see the best of this guy, may even be, you know, even till next year, where he really just completely clicks. I mean, I think what we've seen, his ability to mix pitches, and, you know, if you read Joe Schwartz's of Viva Alberto's great piece today, where he just went in as deep as you could on Carlos Martinez's strikeout ability, you know, how he can throw back-to-back the same pitch and get so many strikeouts and so many good results. I mean, this kid is young, he's talented, and we all know what Wacha did, and we all know what he could still do. I mean, he could bounce right back and be a top-of-the-rotation threat, but if I had to pick right now, I think I'd have to take Carlos, and I almost would have said it's not even close.
Yeah, I tried to read Joe's post, and then my eyes crossed, and I realized I wasn't smart enough to keep reading. He did great work. No, don't get me wrong.
It's not easy. It's,
yeah,
not easy.
After a while, it's like,
because you want to be like, I understood everything, and you go, not really. You know, no, but you know, maybe when he pitches, we can go, okay, let me look at these charts. What's he doing? You know,
maybe
he's
so.
Going back. What, he's not doing it? He's supposed to throw back-to-back sliders. What the heck, Joe? But yeah, it's definitely an in-depth piece. But just when you read that kind of piece and you see the confidence he has, it's just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, there's no, like I said, it's very. I looked through it, and like I said, it looked very in-depth. And I know Joe does a lot of great research. It sometimes I can't keep up, which is, you know, my age, it's not surprising. So, but yeah, I mean, you're going to pick Carlos in this situation. I think the only reason that you wouldn't is if you worry about arm issues. But, you know, Walker's had his issues, you know, his shoulder issues. You don't know when that stress reaction is going to come back. And again, Walker might be, I mean, I could understand if you made the argument that Walker was going to be a more consistent pitcher going forward. I'm not sure that that's 100% true, but I can understand that argument. But I still think the highs of Carlos Martinez are going to be such that you want that guy on your team. You do not want to see him turn into the, you know, the David Price or whoever that's playing on somebody else's team and beating you on a regular basis, especially when you've had him in house. So yeah, I think that's, again, we'll see how this year goes. But it would not surprise me that if he has a healthy and solid year this year, that they don't start talking extension perhaps in this off season. We'll have to see, but I wouldn't be too surprising. I don't know when he'll be up for arbitration. He might be arbitration eligible by the end of this year. He probably is.
Who's this? Who are we talking about? Martinez?
Yeah.
Let's see. He's arbitration eligible in 2017.
Oh, is that? That's before the 17 season, or is that after? Oh, it's kind of the iffy thing on some of these things. It's like 2017.
Yeah, it's 2017, then free agent 2020. So I think before, I would say, yeah, before next season, I think, I guess. Man, I thought he'd be in there having another year, but I guess not.
Well, it may be at the end of 17. I don't, I'd have to look and see. I mean, he's got, what, 14 and 15, right? Full seasons.
Yeah, full seasons. Yeah, I mean, so, he was in relief. Yeah,
relief
he pitched
in 13. He made
89
innings.
Yeah. 28, 89, 179 innings. So, yeah, he just basically became a full-time guy in 2014.
Yeah, so he probably not a Super 2. He might be able to get, yeah, after this season, he's going to have to be arbitration eligible after 16. If he's pitched 14, 15, 16 would give him 3 years, so he would be arbitration eligible. And that must be the 16-17 off season. So, so that's probably when they're going to start thinking about extending him out. And I mean, he's young enough, he's talented enough. There's not really any hang up on him.
And you might see if he hasn't had a good season, you might see him do maybe like a Lynn-like deal where they try to eat up a couple years of his arbitration, maybe.
Oh, I mean, if they sign him to an extension, I mean, they'll definitely buy out all his arbitration years and hopefully a year or two of free agency. You know, you could sign him to a 5-year deal worth, I don't know, I'm terrible at numbers, but you know what? You're 60 million even. Would that be 12 million a year?
Yeah.
And that would be, you know, a significant up from what he would probably be earning. But you know, maybe not as much at the free agent. So I could see something like that. I'm terrible at coming up with contracts, but that would seem reasonable enough for the Cardinals side of things. And whether it'd be reasonable enough on Martinez's side, I don't know. Again, they've got him this season, and Mo can start working on that kind of stuff over the long haul. That's pretty much, I mean, we've seen, you know, Adam Wainwright's pitching like Adam Wainwright. I mean, there's nothing big there. And Mike Leake seems to be adjusting well. It's kind of an interesting story. We talked about it, Tara and I talked about it on Gateway this last week, about why he chose the Cardinals, or really why he wanted to be in Arizona. And I think that, you know, hearing the story about, you know, his father being paralyzed, wanting to be in Arizona so he could be helping them out, I think if anybody was aggravated that the Cardinals were not Mike Leake's first choice, I think that aggravation is gone now. It was a very interesting story, an interesting thing to see, and it almost happened. I mean, Arizona did try to sign him a couple times, but then, you know, they traded for Shelby Miller, and they signed to that cranky, and, you know, suddenly Mike Leake's not exactly a priority. So he went to an organization that he knew and that he was comfortable with and thought that would be a successful one. And I think that in the long haul, we're going to be glad that he's there.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Leake is, you know, he's one of those guys that just, you know, he's like one of those safe kind of, as Corey Rudd said, you know, he's kind of one of those safe stocks. You know, you kind of know what you're going to get every season. He's going to give you innings. He's not going to win a Cy Young Award. He's not going to, you know, blow you away, but he's going to give you that fourth or fifth spot kind of production and performance from the rotation that you need. You know, he's pitched again in this division. He knows the Reds really well, of course. He's worked with Brian Pena. You know, you may see a thing where Brian Pena becomes Mike Leake's pitcher. Yeah, I mean, you know, those two could really hook up, you know, every fifth day in order to give Yadi that kind of good rest. But, you know, he just really was the kind of deal that was kind of sitting there for the Cardinals to make when they needed to do something. Mozeliak obviously didn't like what he saw on the offensive side of the free agent market, so he went out and got pitching. I mean, right when Hayward left, I mean, the minute he said, he's like, you know, well, he pretty much didn't like what he saw on the open market, and it's like, well, let's just double down on pitching, and let's make sure that we replace what we lost. You lost Lackey, you lost Lynn, okay, well, now you get Wainwright and Leake back. And put together a little bit what you have, and especially with the guys you have down the farm, I mean, the Cardinals, once again, have just a lot of good pitching. I mean, they have a lot of different kind of pitching. They have, you know, the upper echelon stuff with Waino and Martinez and Garcia. Then you have just the innings guys, you know, with Leake, and maybe Walker gets kind of right in the middle there. So Cardinals are, once again, going heavy on pitching. Mozeliak knows what this team does best, and that's pitching. So the one thing that Leake gives you, he gives you a consistency that maybe other guys in the rotation, young or old, maybe cannot give you in another year or two.
Yeah, we'll see how that works out. Now, obviously, the Cardinals do feel comfortable with their hitting. Whether that's accurate or not is a different story. We kind of talked a little bit about that in the roundtable that the UCB is going with right now. But, again, and I think we've talked about it a lot, if is the key word for this year, because if everything goes the way it can go, there is a potential for, it's not going to be an offense that lights the thing up and it starts looking like they're playing in Colorado. That's not going to happen. but it's going to be an offense that can score you 4 or 5 runs a night. And with this pitching staff, that should be more than what you need. Again, it takes Matt Holliday being at least healthy and fairly consistent. It takes Stephen Piscotty being for real. It takes Grandel Krychek being for real. It takes Yadier Molina, doing something behind the plate. There's a lot of interesting things in there. Colton Wong maybe taking a step forward. Johnny Peralta not collapsing in the second half. Jerko being able to play, be able to be a guy off the bench. Brandon Moss being that farther away from surgery and being healthy and have the power. Lots of things that can go wrong. And if they go wrong, I don't know that there's a real answer for really any of it. Do you?
When it comes to the offense, I think they have a chance to be just kind of average and productive, but they also have a chance to be very productive and explosive. Brandon Moss recovers from this 2014 power. We're talking about a different kind of production from first base, with Adams, inconsistency. You have the chance with Holliday to even get back to what he did, a year or two ago. And, whatever happened last year, the Cardinals, they averaged 3.99 runs a game. It wasn't like they were averaging 2.5 runs a game and they were just horrible. I mean, they won 100 games because they only allowed 3.24 runs a game. They were very stingy, and I don't think that's going to happen again. So the Cardinals offense is going to have to score some more runs. And it just comes down to, people can't forget about the trimming that John Mozeliak did, especially when it comes to the bench. This may be the best bench the Cardinals have in a few years. Just when it comes, you look at that bench, you see guys that can produce. Because if Moss is starting, Adams is on the bench. Jed Jerko is on the bench. If he happens to be starting for Colton Wong, you have Wong on the bench. You have Tommy Pham on that bench. If Krychek's starting, you have a very lean and mean bench. You might keep an extra guy. You might have Greg Garcia. If Ledesma Diaz hits really well at Memphis, he may be on that bench. And, all these different guys that, last year and year before where you didn't have a bench at all. So you get late in games and the Cardinals play a lot of 1 or 2 run games. And you go, okay, can anybody hit a home run? He's not hitting a home run. No way. But now it could be different. You may have a couple big boppers on that bench that can perform. And, yeah, you really hope that Johnny Peralta doesn't disappear. You hope Colton Wong might have a breakout year. Here he is in his third season. For all intents and purposes, he didn't improve last season. He played a lot more games. He played too many games. He played 35 games in a row at one point. So you hope the smaller moves. The Cardinals didn't go out and get an Upton or a Cespedes, but they went out and got a Jerko to back up the middle infielders. They have guys like Diaz and Greg Garcia who are no longer blocked by Pete Cosma. John Jay was starting to climb. He's in San Diego now. You have Tommy Pham can see, apparently. He's got new contacts. So, if he was doing what he did, really, if you look at Tommy Pham's number at the end of the year, he didn't get a ton of game time, but you look at what he did slugging-wise and on-base percentage and just that kind of power he showed, he was doing that half blind. When he told me that at the winter warm-up, when he told that in the room, I was like, what can this guy do? He's actually seeing completely. This guy could be one of those secret weapons, kind of like Jed Jerko is behind Colton Wong. But, Brandon Moss is somebody that nobody's given a lot of credit because he didn't really make a big impact last year. So, if he is, if his body and his words are telling the truth and his hip is good and he's got his strength back, that was the biggest thing he told us over the offseason last time was that, last offseason he couldn't really train. So he basically went in the 2015 season kind of weak, didn't have a lot. And, even when he was hitting weak, he hit 19 home runs. So, there's a lot of ifs. This team, the offense, I kind of call them, they're kind of like the hypotheticals. If and when, if this guy does this and if this guy can get back to what he was this time, this Cardinal offense could be surprisingly good. They could score 4 or 5 runs a game maybe. And that takes more pressure off your starters. That makes your bullpen – which I think the bullpen, if Walton's healthy, the bullpen could be the strongest area of this team when it comes to just having about four or five closers down there. It's like pick a closer, you know, spin the wheel. So if this offense, I mean, what they did last year wasn't good enough. Well, they almost scored four runs a game last year, which is not great. But if they can do more than that, I mean, and this rotation and bullpen are still stout, you know, things aren't looking so dire. I just think people are really mad. And that was me for at some points this offseason. They're just mad the Cardinals didn't go out and make that big splash for the offense.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, if the Cardinals can get take a lead into the sixth inning, it feels like, you know, probably at least 90% of the time, if not more, they're going to win that game because of the arms that are down there. Now, we'll have to see how this really develops. But like you say, Broxton pitched better after he came over to St. Louis. I don't know that he's going to be a guy you want in the ninth, but he's going to be a guy that's going to be able to do some pretty solid work. You know, we have to still have to see Mr. O and how he does, but, you know, his reputation is going to be that he's going to be pretty solid. We know Kevin Seacrest can lock things down. We know Trevor Rosenthal, much better last year at the end of the rotation, at the end of the games. And then you've got Walden in that mix, who we didn't get to see a lot of last year, but has definitely closed games down. I mean, you put those five in there, you put Seth Maness in there to get some ground balls. You know, you've got probably a Tyler Lyons to be either, you know, kind of a swingman, do jack of all trades type of thing, probably. You know, it's a bullpen that people are going to worry about, I think. And, you know, we saw the Royals win the last couple of years with their bullpens. That'll make up for a lot of things. You would think that that's what we're going to see again this year. But again, you know, we haven't seen any games yet. We're still, what, a couple of days away? I think March 1st, 2nd, something like that is when we start seeing some games. And that's when we'll find out, you know, how things are going. I don't think we can do a whole lot of guesswork till then, see how we see these players against some real competition, even though they won't be seeing a lot of it, you know, especially early on. Somebody who won't be seeing anything for a while is Yadier Molina. Molina has his cast off. Molina is there, you know, working with, I think he's, you know, spinning off knowledge and learning, you know, talking to O and, you know, just kind of being that guy, but he's still not catching much. I think he caught some throws at first base recently or something of that nature. You know, again, I asked this to Tara on Sunday night. It seems to me that if there's any chance, Yadier Molina is going to be on the start opening day rotation or opening day lineup. Even if he can't hit, I think he's going to be out there. Don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think as far as just, I don't want to rush him along. I mean, this guy is coming off a very, I mean, particularly and clearly sensitive surgery where he had to have a couple surgeries. You know, his hands are so important to this guy's job. I mean, his knees are rested, but you want to make sure this guy is healthy. You have Brian Pena. You went out and got, you know, Eric Fryer to basically pick up a backup spot if it's needed. You got Omen and Kelly that are rising to the ranks, but you don't have to rush Yadier Molina along. Because we all know that, you know, you really need him as nearly end of the season, a place where he hasn't really been able to have a healthy postseason lately. You know, he's a guy that's kind of missed the action for the most part the last 2 years when it comes to the most important time of the year. And so, and of course, it's a freak injury, you know, the slide at third base, you know, the play at home plate at Wrigley. But when it comes to Yadier, I'm more worried about the last, you know, 50 than the first, you know, first 15 to 20. I mean, if he has to start on the 15-day DL, and start the season, you know, I guess they start on April 4th. Are they starting in Pittsburgh this year on April 4th? Is it a Monday?
Well, we're starting on the – we get to be that Sunday, one of those Sunday games.
Okay, that, let's see.
That's 12 o'clock, so it'll be the
Sunday.
Yeah,
it's the 4th. Yeah.
And then, so
– okay, so, I mean, really, I mean, so, I mean, if he has to miss, you know, the first 15 games, I mean, if they're not sure about this guy – if he comes back and swinging a bat, I mean, the whole thing we know is that, you know, it's not really what he does behind the plate or really, you know, when it comes to, I mean, you know, catching the ball, I'm sure he can do. I mean, with all this stuff that he can do 100% behind the plate, maybe not, but it just comes to, can he swing the bat hard? I mean, when he swings the bat, that's going to be the biggest test. When he gets in the cage and, you know, just takes some swings, when he gets into a game in spring training, that's going to be the big tipping point. Because he obviously has the cast off. He's obviously mixing and gelling and getting to know his new teammates, and that's great. I just don't want to rush this guy because, you know, it's a different story if you had Tony Cruz behind him and you have, you know, Tony Cruz and Eric Fryer, and like, oh, gosh. You know, you're just looking like who's, you know, flip a coin between those two guys. But you got Brian Peña now. And Brian Peña, you know, the guy, he smiles 24/7. You know, he's soaking up information like a sponge. He's worked, you know, with Mike Leake before. You know, these guys know him. They played against him. So, I mean, you have him, so that gives you a little bit more of an insurance policy when it comes to Yadier Molina. You just don't want to rush him back because if he comes back and he takes a very bad swing and then, you know, if he misses times or if he re-injures it, because clearly it was a very sensitive area, very, you know, sensitive surgery. He had to go back in there and do a little bit more cleanup. But when it comes to Yadier Molina, I have to preach caution with him when it comes to rushing him back.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, he's old, guys. Come on.
Yeah, let's not talk about that. I think the key is for me, if he is, and it's an if, but if he's catching by the middle of March, like they say there is going to, we have seen over the last year or last 2 years that they are not too worried about his offensive production if he's out there. You know, and granted, you're right. They used to have Tony Cruz out there and limping along. Yadier Molina is still as good as Tony Cruz. But I still feel like they're perfectly willing to let Yadier Molina find his timing in the major leagues and let him start opening day. Now, again, that depends on how his spring training goes. They're not going to rush him back, like you say, but I think if he is catching at all in spring training and he's not looking, if there's not really a risk of re-injuring that thumb, that they're not going to worry too much about if he's 0-for-8, if he's only had a few at-bats. I think he'll still go north with this team. And maybe Peña plays a little bit more in those first couple of weeks. You know, the Cardinals have like 3 off days in the first 2 weeks anyway. You know, it may be where they give him some rest there and you know, let Peña play 1 or 2 of those other games in those first couple weeks. I don't know. But I my feeling is, you know, you're not going to see Yadier Molina on a rehab assignment in Springfield.
Oh, no.
I don't think so. You could. I mean, when we roll it out, but I just think that they're perfectly willing. I think that they think that what he brings to the pitching staff, what he brings to the field is enough, is so valuable that they will worry about his offense later. I mean, when he, you know, they'll want him to start hitting, obviously, but if he can pick it up while he's catching and, you know, kind of get back into the groove against major league pitching, I think they're fine with it. I think they'll deal with him going 0-for-15 as long as he's back there leading this pitching staff.
And also when it comes to Yadier, I mean, I guess the one thing you could say, that this guy doesn't take like Matt Holliday like hacks at the plate. He doesn't like swing like he's going to blow down the half of the stadium with his swing. Like, you know, he's not swinging Thor's hammer. I mean, the guy just kind of, he's basically a contact guy. So the one thing that I could see it happen is if he can at least make contact, he can at least spray the ball around the field like he usually does for the last, you know, majority of his career. I think he could be ready. The biggest test for me is just when he starts to swing that bat and see if there was any pain there, taking some different kind of cuts. I mean, his catching is the golden goose of his appeal going forward. But, I mean, it just for me, it's when he takes those first swings, that the reaction to that, I mean, if he comes back the next day and he's fine, his hand's good, then I think it's a definite he's on the opening day roster. So I think we should all just hope he's going to be there. But if he's not, it's not the end of the world.
The good thing about spring training is that all the Hall of Famers tend to wind up back down in Jupiter, reliving a little glory days, if you will. Ozzie Smith's down there now doing some instructing. Talking about defensive shifts, and I read the headline, and he called them absurd. It wasn't reading the story. It's more the fact that he just can't believe hitters aren't breaking, you know, hitting against the shift, finding the holes and forcing people to play them more straight up and down. You know, I can't argue with that part. It seems very funny to, I mean, like the article says, Rizzo bunted a couple times against that shift, and now they won't do it as much. You got to show the people that you can hit where they're not, so they'll, you know, play you a little bit more honestly going forward.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of hitters that just go, okay, well, I'll just try to hit it through you. You know, there's a lot of guys that don't really try to take advantage of it. I mean, and Ozzie's just kind of being the guy that goes, look, I mean, I would lay bunts down all over the place. He also said that, you know, he really regretted striking out so much because he's probably a guy he's a guy that probably thinks, how would I do in today's game? And if I was to be a guy that maybe pulled the ball a little bit and they gave me that shift, I would exploit it. And you know Ozzie would with his speed. It'd be one of those things where, you know, he would do it every time. But I think there's a lot of guys these days are just like, you know, man, Adams is just probably about ready to give up and just try to crank it over their head. But, you know, the shift, I mean, I think it's used a lot. I understand with certain guys like a Jay Bruce or an Adam Dunn, the guy's never going to hit the ball to the other side of the infield if you force them to. You know, if you put like, you know, a free day at the beach and some KFC, Adam Dunn, can you hit the ball to the other side? No, I'm not going to do it. You know, you have certain guys that just, they're stubborn when it comes to going the opposite field. And I think that Ozzie's just kind of, he's mocking the overuse of the shift, and I think he's just mocking the way that a lot of these hitters don't just kind of swallow some pride and go for the hit instead of going for the bomb.
Yeah, but, you know, I appreciate, I mean, Ozzie's my favorite, one of my favorites. I mean, always. But let me tell you, if Ozzie Smith, the Ozzie Smith, especially the Ozzie Smith that was 83 or 84 or 85, was playing in today's ball game when, you know, back in Ozzie's time, if you hit 94, 95, you were a flamethrower. You know, now everybody's throwing 96, 98. Ozzie's going to have a whole lot of strikeouts because that was not a bat that was going to keep up. I mean, you know, he might be bunting a lot more. He might be
doing a bunt, yeah, but yeah.
You know, he's going to be slapped, but he is not going to be hitting that ball as much. I mean, he just wasn't. You know, but later in his career, he could hit a little bit better, but it's even then. I don't know. I feel like that the flamethrowers of today would overpower a guy like Ozzie, you know, in the long haul. Maybe not, but maybe he'd adjust. And obviously training would be different than it was back then, too. You know, he might have been a little bit stronger, but then you wonder if he would have lost some of his fielding. I get what he's saying, but I think you also have to take into account, you know, what you're facing as well. I mean, the pitching staffs of today are significantly better than even, I think they're even better than, you know, what, 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's just there's so many guys that are just throwing, not just hard, but they're throwing, like, moving fastball, mm-hmm. stuff that's like, you know, Craig Kimbrell, guys like, you know, Rosenthal, guy that can go 100 and he can break it down to like 90. And it's just devastating. When I think of like, you know, you think of what Costner's in Bo Durham, where he has, it's exploding sliders and devastating breaking stuff. I mean, everybody's throwing it. I mean, if you don't throw it, everybody goes, why don't you throw hard? You know, because everybody else, 90% of the league or more, they're throwing hard and they're throwing moving fastballs. You got Lance Lynn, who basically makes a living off his fastball, you know, moving it wherever he wants. So, yeah, I mean, I do see that point. I just think it's kind of funny. I've always liked Ozzie. He's very candid. You know, a lot of guys, the retired guys, they'll be like, oh, yeah, I love the game. It's great. You know, Ozzie would go, no, that shift's stupid. You know, I mean, it just, I mean, I love the way he just kind of speaks out. He reminds me of a, you know, Brett Hall, you know, a retired guy for the Blues. He always just, he didn't care what people thought he said. I mean, he would just speak his mind. He still does. And those kind of players, you know, guys like Lance Berkman who just tell you how it is. And it was just kind of amusing to see Ozzie say that.
Yep.
I almost kind of wonder, what would Ozzie think of this new rule about the second base sliding?
Yeah, they came in today and it really seems, and I've seen a little bit of talk about, I haven't really read through it, but it sounds like it's going to definitely reduce, if not eliminate, the neighborhood play.
Because right now, this year, I mean, that they can actually review it, can't they?
I think that's true. I think that's part of it.
And that's a big deal. Was there were so many times last year, we're like, yeah, he didn't touch the bag, but they're not going to overturn it. Now, you know, you're talking about a one-run game late in the game, and, you know, a guy on first and second, and, you know, one out when it comes to a double play ball, if he's not in that bag, you know, that's going to be a big deal.
And that's, I mean, I get what a lot of people say, you need to touch the bag, and that's absolutely understandable and absolutely true that you should be forced to. But there is that, you know, that idea of a runner coming in at second, and if you're standing there with your leg planted on the base, and they, you know, the idea is they have to slide to the base. You know, we saw, I mean, granted, it wasn't the same thing, but we have seen a number of times where players.
Chase Utley.
Utley did that, you know.
Holiday, Kang
from, and at Scudero, he went after him a little farther than he should have, although he was still kind of in the line. He kind of slid farther and not out as much.
If Matt Holiday's coming, I'll be in a left center field going, okay, I'm going to be back here. I'll back up the throw.
Yeah, I mean, I get why we have the neighborhood play, because you should be able to, you know, that being said, you know, I wouldn't mind reviewing it with the idea that a small radius is allowed. Because there were times where guys were way out, you know, well out of the way. And definitely you want to make sure that the base runner slides through the base and not, you know, halfway out into the outfield trying to get the second baseman. I get that, definitely, too. But there's going to have to be and it's going to be interesting to see how this works. I mean, a lot of us didn't care for the idea of the catcher collision. And I think baseball is still working on that, but for the most part, it seems to have been okay. So, you know, maybe this will be the same thing, and maybe once it gets into practice and the kinks are worked out in it, it'll be a couple years from now and we won't even be talking about it. But I think we'll just have to wait and see on that one, because that has got some potential to hurt people, and it's got some potential to, you know, to be a better game. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, so it's one of those things where I think the league is just trying to be fair to the game, but they're also trying to protect its players and trying to find that medium, that medium, that balance when it comes to respecting the history, respecting the future, you know, trying to protect your players, but also, you know, not let a guy be, you know, a foot off the bag. And if it's a meaningful play late in the game, and their teams go, hey, then the guy's not on the bag. I mean, you practice this stuff. I mean, it's one way. I mean, these guys have been taught this way. I mean, it's not that they're taught to have their foot off the bag. It's just the neighborhood play has kind of been in around for so long, and now you got to tell them, okay, get on the bag. And it's like, what? You know, I mean, it should just be like a little skip, you know, a little leg switch, and it's over. But now, you know, they're going to have to really make sure they're there, because, you know, even Colton Long will kind of take that throw and come in front of the bag a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, is he going to get that back foot on the bag? Is he going to be able to, you know, is he going to try to stay behind the bag and take it and then just pivot? Or is he going to try to come in front of the bag? And it's all that thing's going to come into play. Because, you know, when it comes to Long, I mean, if he makes an error in the first inning and then all of a sudden this neighborhood play comes into thing, you know, where's his head going to be? So that's what I keep thinking of. You know, Colton Long is a very talented guy, but we all know when he has a bad game or if he makes an error, then his head's basically gone. And I mean, what if this neighborhood play comes into play in one of those close games? But every one of those things you're having to see play out. I mean, when the first challenge comes, I mean, obviously what people are really worried about is that we're just going to have one of those long challenges, like where it's just pretty simple. Was his foot in the bag or was it not? But let me look at the replay like 97 times, because that's what umpires will do, and it just drives me nuts.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem with the idea of a radius as well. You know, this way you can say, hey, he did touch the bag, or hey, he didn't touch the bag. It's gonna be a difficult thing for them to implement, I think, and we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I think anything that, you know, keeps the base runners going at the base is a good thing, and you definitely want to have as often as you can. You want the second baseman or shortstop touching. Mainly the shortstop, but touching that bag and getting the ball off. So I don't know. We will see. Cardinals start spring training play. Well, technically a week from yesterday, they play one of the colleges down there. First game against major league competition is a week from today against the Marlins. In that first week or so of games, is there anything you look for? When you're watching, when you're listening to it or watching it or checking the box scores?
I'm kind of looking at when the hitters, it just comes to swings, you know, if anybody's doing anything differently, you know, just getting a chance to see, you know, what if Grichuk or Piscotty did anything different. Just seeing the massive cut of Randall Grichuk and see how far he can hit the ball. But, you know, I guess you kind of look to see guys like who are kind of question marks, like, you know, is Matt Adams, does he look different against lefties? You know, does Brandon Moss have some of that power back? Is he really getting behind the ball and driving it? But there's just, I mean, because you know, it just depends on is the other team pitching their best guys, or do they wait to the middle part of the month or the second week? For most part, it's really just seeing these guys out there again. You know, it may sound kind of just really easy and corny, but you know, we haven't seen these guys play in a matter of months. So just seeing, Matt Carpenter come up to the plate, Matt Holliday take his cuts, guys get up there, seeing Wainwright fire a pitch, in a start. It's going to be a great feeling seeing these guys. I guess it's just kind of like knocking off the rust off ourselves. Right now, just hearing about these guys at camp, that doesn't do anything for us. To see these guys in action, that's where the real spring training for the fans begins. When they start playing games next week, that's when the fans kind of – when we get to watch them play, that's like us arriving at camp as far as seeing what they're doing, seeing who looks good, who looks stiff. Did somebody change their stance, change their swing? Does somebody just look like, out of it? Or is it just, really, as far as being analytical, it's just seeing these guys again, seeing them, in action, because we all know once those games start, they really don't officially end until October.
That is true. It's tough. Like I said, that first week, they might get an at-bat. They might pitch an inning. Really, you just want to see, especially after the first week, everybody be healthy still. And see.
Also, Paul, watch the quads, basically. The quads and the shoulders, basically, is what I'm watching this first 2 weeks.
There's really not – I don't feel like there's a whole lot of competition right now just because everything seems to be pretty locked up. But, you never know,
I mean, the bench thing is really the only thing I'm looking at is if Greg Garcia gets that last spot, do they go with a 13-12 split? I mean, I wrote an article today that you really like. It's about Tyler Lyons deserving that spot in the bullpen. I really hope they kind of abandon the Lugie and go with the Lyons as their second lefty.
Yeah, I think that, Lyons has to be on this team unless they trade him.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the other thing to look forward, if somebody does start to push, I think they saw Tua Lavallo working on a cutter. If somebody does make it difficult for the Cardinals to send them down, do they look to make some sort of trade, a little small trade or something of that nature?
When it comes to Lyons, we all know he's clearly, his numbers are just electric out of the bullpen. And what he gives you, he kind of gives you that Carlos Villanueva kind of guy that can – he can rescue a starter in the second or third. He can be a bridge. He can pitch in the extra innings. He's just one of those guys that I don't think you really have. You don't want to start stretching Seth Maness. You don't want to, touch any of the closers too much. But he's just one of those guys that can go a number of innings and be fine. He seems to have a rubber arm. The guy can not start for like a month, and then all of a sudden he can just fire off three or four innings. And I think they, if Sam looks really good, he's still a very young guy. He can come down to Memphis and just keep it going. And you got to at least see what Lyons has. But you never know. Maybe a trade comes around where another team's going to give you a bat you might like. Maybe you get another catcher. If Yadier's not ready and you want to get another catcher, you never know. I think they're going to have to make – it's going to be a hard decision, because if they really do like somebody else – if Dean, Kiefer, I probably just shredded his last name, but he's a guy who had great numbers as a loogie last year at Memphis. If they really want that kind of guy, he's a guy that can make Lyons' spot in jeopardy. But I just think with the way that some of these guys, it's nice to have that protection, the guy who can come in and go, rescue guy in the second and go, into the fifth or sixth. But if they want to go with a guy like Dean, Kiefer, a guy who's kind of getting older himself, Dean is getting into his late 20s. So if they want to go that way, or if, like you said, if Sam has a terrific spring and he's your future and Tyler Lyons might not be, then maybe you make a trade. I just hopefully that they don't just go, okay, we're just going to let you go. thanks for your service, Tyler. But it's a very interesting thing, because you're right. He can't go down to Memphis. He doesn't have options. And I think he still has value to this team, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing is, even with all those other guys, they do have options. And the depth because we'd like to think that the injury bug moved on after last year. But There's no guarantees of that, and so you know, if somebody does go down, you want to have these guys around and available. So, I mean, the roster that they go leave Jupiter with is not the same one that they'll probably have.
This really makes you, and you also have to wonder, I mean, Jordan Walton's healthy right now. When he starts ramping it up and throwing a few innings here and there, I mean, you never know. He may start the season on the 15-day DL. So, you know, that opens up another spot. So it's in flux. But, you know, if you kind of say, okay, he's a given, he's going to make it if he stays healthy, then, yeah, there's like that one spot. I mean, you know, and unless you – I don't see the team taking – you know, more than 12 pitchers. I just don't see it. So I do think that last spot in the bullpen and then the last spot on the bench are going to be the only really competitive things in spring training.
Wouldn't think so. Before we wrap it up with the entertainment section, ought to probably make note that Rick Hummel's 70th birthday is today. It was pretty nice to see. They put a picture of Tyler Lyons' jersey up for Hummel's picture there for number 70. It's a fascinating article. I mean, Derek Gould just writes a nice little tribute to him, which is understandable, especially after the paper losing Brian Burwell and Joe Strauss in the last, you know, 14 to 15
months.
Yeah,
it's tough.
But it's kind of interesting that he points out that the Cardinals have been covered by a Hall of Fame writer for the last, consecutively, the last 102 years. I mean, that is outstanding to think. And I think that's just part of one of the reasons that the Cardinals are considered one of the best fan bases in baseball is because they get such good writing. And maybe it's some kind of chicken of the egg type of thing, but they get to know the game and they get to, you know, have the game explained to them. Well, you know, Derek's obviously no slouch either and may be the next in that line at some point in time. But it's you know, this is, what it said, 38th spring training for Hummel. He's been covering the Cardinals for 43 years. I do think that maybe he's lost a little bit off his fastball, but, you know, he's still putting out much better stuff than I'm ever going to write. So it's pretty impressive. I mean, to see the quality, not only that Hummel has brought, but for the Cardinal writers in general over the last, you know, century.
Yeah, I mean, getting a chance to work with Rick Hummel last year at Memphis during the Jaime Garcia rehab start, just kind of sitting there joking with him and picking his brain and talking to him about stuff. I mean, this is why I did back when I worked on the Mania scoreboard. I mean, when I went down to the press box before the game, all I would do is just pick the brain of Bernie Nicholas, Joe Strauss, Brian Burwell. I would just, you know, bounce stuff off them, see what stuck, see what was terrible. And most of it was terrible back then. They just said, no, what are you thinking? You know, but yeah, I mean, Rick Hummel, he's just a guy. He's stuck around. I mean, he's not going to leave to go to another paper or go to a website. He's going to, you know, retire with the Post-Dispatch. It's just what it's what he's doing, and he's happy and he's respected. I mean, and to Winter Warm this past month, he walks in the room. You know, he gets his questions in. He's not antsy like, you know, most of us are trying to get ahead of the next guy. Like, when's he going to finish his answer so I can ask a question? Rick Hummel, he's just a crafty veteran. I mean, he knows how to do it. You know, he goes there with the plan. You know, guys like him and Burwell, I mean, when I worked with next to him back in 2014, I mean, he had a plan. He had a story that he wanted to write. He wasn't like me, which basically just writing as much until his hands get tired and then I just ice him and write more. You know, these guys, they have an ability just to see the big picture of a story that they want to tell. And that's very impressive, and that's something you love to be around. I mean, you know, right in this room this past month, I'm next to Frank Cusimano. You're next to, you know, Rick Hummel, Derek Gould. I mean, the young guys like Ben Fredrickson and Benjamin Hockman. You get all these different ages and groups and writers, and it's a great mix. But you expect to see Rick Hummel wherever there's a story. Rick Hummel's going to be there. He's going to be one of the most patient guys. He's not going to show any young writer up. I mean, he doesn't, you know, make it like he's the man. And, you know, he could because he's the commish. I mean, he can walk in the room and drop his hat and make one of us pick it up. We would. But he's just a guy who commands respect by just doing the same things he's done for the past, I mean, just decades. And, yeah, the Cardinals have always had a writer. I mean, when I grew up, it was Bernie. I mean, I ran down to the newspaper state to see what Bernie said about the last game. I mean, I had to know. I mean, that's basically how I started my day. And Now I'm grown up, and Bernie has moved on to a different play, to a different different website, different station. But you know, well, Rick Hummel's still there.
Very true, very true, and seems like he'll probably be there still for yeah. some time to come. So, all right, Dan, what are we watching this week?
You know, I did watch the wildly creative and funny Deadpool. It's one of those movies that I call it the movie that will appeal to even non-comic book fans. Was the kind of it has a little fun with the comic book movies. It has a little fun with Wolverine. You know, as vulgar as it can get, I mean, Ryan Reynolds has been trying to make this movie for 10 years, and basically the studio has told him no. And he finally made this movie, and it was wildly successful. It was very funny. And now every other movie is going to copy it by being R and trying to be a little more edgier. So I really enjoyed that movie. I mean, it's not for kids. A couple people have asked me, can I take a kid to it? Like, no, because if you get a call from your teacher the next day going, well, he said what Deadpool said, your kid's going to be in trouble. So this is not a movie for kids. As I asked that a couple of times, I'm like, no, have you seen the trailer? but, I mean, if you're an adult and you like kind of like that edgy comic book kind of fare, I mean, it's really well done. It's different. It doesn't attempt to be like every other movie. I mean, even in the opening credits, it's like cheesy British villain. And then it's like overly muscled woman. And it's just like they have fun with it. And there's a movie coming out this weekend, more of a gritty cop film called Triple Nine. It's got Casey Affleck and Woody Harrelson, and it's directed by John Hillcoat. You know, if you look at the trailer, you might just go, that's just another crime movie. It's going to be, you know, it'll be entertaining. But then you go, John Hillcoat, a guy who directs all these versatile films that are looked upon as like, you know, Academy Award material. Now he does this kind of this crime film. So that's what I'm going to be seeing. You know, I'm going to see it probably tomorrow night. It's hopefully going to be an entertaining movie, a little action thriller with the cops and robbers. But there's also 13 Hours about the soldiers of Benghazi who rescue people when their compound was overrun by rebels and militants. So there's it's a good mix. You know, we're getting into March and April and May where Batman and Superman comes out and Captain America. We have the Oscars in a few days. It's basically kind of a set for Deadpool, really. It's kind of a slow time in the movies. It's where the spring season kind of starts to heat up. It's where even myself, I've only been to a movie. I saw Deadpool 2 weeks ago. I saw 13 Hours, The Soldiers of Benghazi 2 weeks before that. So I'm not even really seeing a movie every week because there's just not much that really demands the $10 or the $12 or whatever it is these days. You know, I mean, for you, I mean, you know, Star Wars is still in theaters. It's still doing well. I mean, and it's over 2 months after it came out. But it's just one of those movies where the seasons kind of go from, okay, it's no longer January, February, where it's not a lot of great movies are released. Now we're going to start getting into the spring. Right after the Oscars is kind of what I like to call the launch of the spring films, the early blockbusters, where things kind of get serious. I mean, I've spent more time this last week catching up on Netflix series of House of Cards and really in a movie theater.
Yeah, and then, you know, you've got here pretty soon, you got second season of Daredevil coming out on Netflix.
Oh, I can't wait for that. Yeah. I am the biggest, my favorite comic book character is Frank Castle. And so when I saw that they were going to bring him in, I was like, okay, even though Dolph Lundgren and Thomas Jane, they tried to play Frank Castle, I think John Bernthal was born to play the guy. I mean, there's a guy I really respect called Frank Grillo who I think could have been really good, but John Bernthal is, I think he's going to be the highlight of the second season, really digging into the character of Frank Castle, a.k.a. the Punisher.
Yeah, well, Grillo's a little busy other places. And
he is. He's a, you know, I asked him about that. I was like, you know, you're kind of in the building. Can you just nudge your way over and go, you know, I'm going to play Crossbones, and now I'm going to be Frank Castle. You're going to deal with it. He says it doesn't really work that way. I think I'd be shot.
Yeah.
Probably, you know, but even Grillo said on Twitter that, hey, John Bernthal is a perfect pick. And he really is. He's one of those guys, you know, he's on The Walking Dead. He was on a show called Mob City. He's a guy that kind of what Grillo used to be before he really blew up lately. He's a guy you know by his face more than his name, John Bernthal. So I think Daredevil is going to do really, really good things for him. It's going to give him a really – his first really big role to really chew into. And like I said, Frank Castle's my favorite guy. He's a very simplistic guy. You know, his family was killed by mobsters, and he just kind of takes the law into his own hands, and that conflicts with Daredevil's way of justice.
Yeah, like you said, Star Wars 70th day today for Star Wars, 70 days. It's not actually, it's actually been out of my town for a few weeks now. But yeah, it's just now, it's still, I know it's still at the IMAX, but I went and saw it at the IMAX, which was outstanding.
How many times did you see it?
I have seen it four times.
Okay, so what was, after you left the first time, maybe you left the fourth time, what was something that you picked up or you appreciated more the more you watched it?
The fourth time I saw it was at IMAX, and the IMAX 3D, it lets you, I think, just see some of the details in the background that you probably didn't notice before, things that are a little bit sharper. I can't think of anything off the top of my head right now. It was right at the end of January when I saw it, so it's been about a month, but I still remember just some things that, you know, like I said, they weren't important things. may have stood out a little bit more when you're watching it in that thing. And I think the music, I mean, I've downloaded the soundtrack. It's really, really is pretty interesting. I mean, for the John Williams score, it's got obviously the hints of the old movies, but it's completely new as well. And so that's been pretty interesting. Comes out on DVD supposedly April 5th. So supposedly on iTunes here in about 2 weeks. So, you know, that'll be, and then we'll start phasing into looking at Rogue One, but you know, there's some other stuff to come in too. And of course, you know, it won't be too long, and you can start to get to those summer movies like Civil War and things of that nature.
Yeah.
So, just gotta get through the slog of the, you know, the this part of the year. But thankfully, you got spring training coming, and we'll all start focusing a lot more on the field, and that's the important thing.
Definitely, we're all going to have the nightly obsession. So there's people like I've told all my other baseball fans, take advantage of these nights. You know, take advantage of the fact that it's 10:14 right now, and you're not going to be driven crazy by either a very close game, a loss, or just a totally abomination. So just kind of just be really, you know, breathe. You know, that's kind of what I'm doing. I just go, you know, there's soon that I'm just going to be sitting here clenching my fist, probably need to go for a long walk. And it's not something that, you know, Matheny will do or a blown save. It's just baseball is a stressful game. I said that in my – I did a piece for Redbird Rants about the trying to predict the roster for opening day. And it's just like I open up by saying, you know, baseball is a hard game to love. It's just because it asks so much of you, so much time. You know, the season ends, but, you know, playoffs, and then you have the trade deadline. Then before you know the trade deadline, then all of a sudden it's mid-January. Then it's time for the report. So there's not really a lot of time for the fans to really rest. So take this time, relax, because sooner rather than later, it's going to be Cardinal baseball time every night.
Yep, it's a good thing.
It's beginning.
You know, it may be stressful, but it is a good thing. And, you know, that background soundtrack of the summer is always a beautiful thing. All right, Danny, anything else before we wrap it for the night?
No, I would just say everybody have a good weekend. I know down here in Arkansas, it's gotten cold again. It was hot a few days ago, and then it's going to be warm again. So wherever you're at, appreciate the weather, because it's about ready to either get cold or, well, warm again. So whatever it is, appreciate it.
Yeah.
It does keep the hoodies close, keep the sandals close, but also keep, you know, the extra layers and T-shirts close, because it's that time of the year where you don't know what it's going to be the next week.
Absolutely. That is crazy. You know, 70 on Sunday up here, and then it was snowing in parts of Arkansas yesterday.
Yep.
And then it'll be about 70 again this weekend. So just ride it out. So that's all you can do. All right, Dan and I will be back probably maybe next week, maybe the week after. We'll just have to – we'll kind of play it by ear and see how things go. We'll start getting back to our regular weekly stuff pretty soon. But we're not 100% sure we're ready for it yet. And maybe you're not ready to have us back every week yet either. That's very
well,
good possibility.
Yeah, well, let's put it this way. If this one gets a lot of listens, maybe we'll come back next week. If not, we'll kind of back off.
Maybe so. Of course, yeah, probably you've given up by this point. You didn't actually hear that.
Yeah,
so doesn't really matter.
Number 25, yeah. Basically, if your average time for listeners is like 35 minutes, you don't even know when we do a movie section.
That's right. So. Alrighty, well, for Dan, I'm Daniel, and we'll talk at you soon. Thanks for listening to The Best Dance in Baseball. We'd love to have your feedback on the show. Email us at bestdanceinbaseball@gmail.com. Dan Buffa can be found on Twitter at Buffa82, Daniel Shoptaw at C70. The show's Twitter handle is bestdan, BASEBAL1. You can also find us on Facebook under Best Dance in Baseball.